Back on the record, having dealt with a technical difficulty, please silence your cell phones. And the topic today is an informational hearing on school to apprenticeship and workforce development. I want to thank Representative McCarty for his interest in the subject, and it was Representative McCarty's interest in the subject of apprenticeship and school to apprenticeship and career and technical education that led us to discussing draft legislation on school to apprenticeship. So the purpose of the hearing today is to walk through what is the apprenticeship system, what exists today in the secondary school system with respect to CTE and school to apprenticeship, and what opportunities might we have as a committee to strengthen and expand that system. And as members have other ideas on legislation to work on together, certainly please talk to us, because I'm very excited about this collaboration and look forward to others. So with that, I want to go to John Hockla, the director of the Alaska Office of Apprenticeship for the U.S. Department of Labor, for an overview on apprenticeship and its relationship to high school. Mr. Hockla, are you on the line?
Yes, Representative Fields.
Okay, please proceed.
Oh, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is, is the slide presentation up, Grace?
Yes, it is. And she will, Grace Kubitz will tab through for presenters as you're doing your slides.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is John Hockla. I am the state director for the Alaska Office of Apprenticeship. I am employed with the U.S. Department of Labor. Today we are going to review apprenticeship for high school students and also touch on pre-apprenticeships. The presentation contains several photos of Alaskan youth across the state who are engaged in career and technical education training, construction academies, pre-apprenticeship trainings, and registered apprenticeships. Thank you to our partners for providing these photos. Next slide, please. Youth apprenticeships are on the move. Communities across the country are launching new programs that engage students in apprenticeships during their high school years. DOL's Youth Apprenticeship Portfolio supports apprenticeship programs for youth between the ages of 16 to 24 that combine academic and technical classroom instruction with work experience through an apprenticeship program. The portfolio provides policies, investments, partnerships, awareness raising, and tools to organizations that are working to raise awareness about youth apprenticeship and to start programs. Between fiscal year 2015 and 2019, the number of youth apprentices has nearly doubled in the United States. The National Apprenticeship Act of 2021 includes youth and pre-apprenticeship. Next slide, please. High school registered apprenticeship programs combine work-based on-the-job learning with relevant technical education in the classroom. Students who participate in these programs graduate with a high school diploma, may earn college credits and national industry credentials. They also start out on a career path that continues after high school graduation, whether that is a continuation of their registered apprenticeship along with college, college only, registered apprenticeship only, or other full-time employment. High school registered apprenticeships benefit businesses as well by providing a fresh source of talent developed from within their community. Next slide. For students, you can easily get the essential skills and experience you need for your future career through a registered apprenticeship program. These programs combine your current high school curriculum with critical on-the-job training from a local employer. As an apprentice, you will receive classroom education, technical skills training, and work experience while earning a paycheck. Upon completion, you will earn a portable credential that recognizes the dedication you put forth and expertise you now have in a particular career field without student debt. Next slide, please. For parents, you want the best for your child, including the best possible start to their professional career. High school registered apprenticeship enables your high school age student to gain the skills for in-demand occupations while earning a paycheck in a safe environment. The program also helps ensure that your students academic success. High school completion is a necessary part of the program. Structured on-the-job training paired with classroom instruction relevant to a viable occupation create the right combination to prepare your child for a promising career. Next slide. For educators, preparing students to be the next generation of skilled workers is vitally important. By partnering with local businesses, your school district can create additional opportunities for learning and growth through high school registered apprenticeship. The high school curriculum and career and technology training you offer are integral pieces of the program. In addition, high school registered apprenticeship enhances your academic success goals, as high school completion is a program requirement. The young lady on the left, Miss Caden, on the lower left, she is a senior this year at Akiak School, and she's our first ever youth apprentice for the associate teacher occupation, and Akiak School is the program sponsor. Next page, please. For businesses, what skills will your workforce need over the next few years? How will you replace your retiring employees? High school registered apprenticeship can help employers address these challenges. Cooperation and partnering with your local school district allows you to professionally develop a high school junior or senior apprentice through on-the-job training that you help to customize. The program essentially allows you to create your next generation workforce. Next slide, please. Pre-apprenticeship for youth. Students take courses directly related to the apprenticeship field in addition to their required high school coursework, which count towards high school graduation. Youth may engage in pre-apprenticeship as an on-ramp to apprenticeship. For example, they can participate in on-the-job learning activities, which can count towards entry into an apprenticeship program. Students can also apply to an apprenticeship program leading up to or upon high school graduation. Next slide, the final. Here's a list of resources for what we covered today. Apprenticeship.gov is our primary website. In there, there's a lot of information, very useful, very current information on youth apprenticeship. The resource hub includes case studies, videos, fact sheets. The investment page outlines where current and federal investments are across the United States. And my office has a very close working relationship with the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development, primarily through the job centers. And below that is my contact information. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Are there any questions?
Representative Nelson.
Through the chair, Mr. Hakala, I was looking through the slides. I did not see any sort of estimate on, you know, kind of the largest apprenticeship programs they have in the state. Do you happen to know how many or kind of the largest few?
Through the chair to Representative Nelson, we work with programs, single employer and multi-employer programs. So I work with programs across multiple occupations and industries, which might only have one apprentice, and some of them have upwards of 300 apprentices. So if that answers your question, sir.
Follow up. Through the chair. I'm wondering, you know, when you're speaking of those 300 apprentices, you know, that's kind of the largest. Is that the largest, or what does that kind of look like on the larger end for apprenticeships? Like, what are the kind of larger apprenticeship programs? Can you name them for me?
Yes, through the chair. I would say most of the majority of our apprenticeship programs are in the, through the chair, the majority of our apprenticeship programs are in the construction occupations. And so we have the larger occupations are going to be electrician, is going to be plumber and pipe fitter and carpenter amongst the construction crafts. And your larger programs are going to be the IBEW NECA apprenticeship program. They call themselves the Alaska Joint Electrical Apprenticeship and Training Trust. On the open shop side, that's the Associated Building and Contractors of Alaska. They're the non-union side of multiple occupations. And so those are the two probably largest programs. And so it varies. The multi-employer programs typically have more apprentices than do the single employer. We have, for example, in the healthcare sector, I don't have my reports in front of me, but I mean, the Alaska Primary Care Association has a high number of of healthcare apprentices. They're a multi-employer program, and I think they're going to present today, so maybe they could share their total numbers with you, and multiple occupations. So it's kind of a moving target, but I could provide the committee with a list of current programs that are registered and the number of apprentices in them. That's probably the best answer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That'd be great, Mr. Hakala. And Representative Shragi has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And yes, Representative Shragi, for the record. Two-part question. First is, what is the typical duration of an apprenticeship program? And of those that complete these programs, can you give me any ideas to what percent of them start in high school?
Oh, through the chair, Representative. We have occupations that last from 1 year to 5 years. And I think when we're talking high school apprenticeship, we're really talking, we want to look at all the occupations, but we want to look at occupations generally, I would think, in the 1 and 2 year range, unless they were tracking into the construction trades, which can last 4 and 5 years, right? And so they vary, and we respond to the demand by industry and the occupation. What I notice is that in healthcare field, for example, we're working with a lot of 1 and 2 year occupations, and I see that kind of trending a little bit as well in the social services. What was the second part of your question, please?
Through the chair. So I believe you've actually partially answered it. I'm just trying to get a sense as to what level of engagement you have with high school students. If there's 100 folks that are in an apprenticeship program, how many of those are students or people that started that program as a student?
Through the chair, that's an excellent question. I don't track it as well as I should, maybe this might be a way to answer it. We have school to registered apprenticeship linkage agreements and all of the major programs into their selection process. So I've been with this department or agency for just over 20 years. And so for years, programs have always tried to work and attract with youth. The youth apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship is not in our federal apprenticeship regulations, and that's why I included that bullet point about the National Apprenticeship Act of 2021, because if it becomes part of our regulation, we'll start tracking it more. I have linkage agreements with various high schools around Alaska, and of recently I've worried less about developing a formal linkage agreement. And for example, with Akiak School there, we just developed the standards of apprenticeship directly with them because I guess through experience, I just try to get the program standards as close to the employment site as possible. And so I don't have a really solid statistical answer for you. But I could research it, it would take some time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Funnels.
Yeah, thank you very much for your testimony today, Mr. Hackle. It's good to hear your voice again. Could you describe what opportunities would be available to the state if the National Apprenticeship Act were to pass?
Through the chair, to Representative Bonholz. It's nice to hear you also. I think it's a game changer for the national apprenticeship system. You can research it on the internet and find the draft language, but with that comes some significant funding to each state, and so it's going to be a real game changer. And what we're asking here, I think what we're expecting, or what we're hoping for, is that as organizations embrace this youth apprenticeship, there's going to have to be some type of support come out of the federal Department of Labor to help stand some of these programs out. And so this conversation with your committee is very timely in that regard. There on the investment links on the final page of the presentation, you can see that there are existing investments nationally for youth apprenticeship that even you might be able to take become a partner with now, because they're still active grants. But I would hope that the state of Alaska really watches the funding streams and applies solely to help these youth apprenticeships launch more robustly in our state. Thank you.
Thank you.
And very good point, Mr. Hakala. The exact reason we're having this discussion today is if we put the programmatic structure in place, it is highly likely we will be able to tap additional federal funding streams. Representative Snyder.
Thank you, Representative Snyder speaking. I have a multi-part question, if that's okay. Thank you.
Oops.
Mr. Hagler, I'm curious, and I appreciate there may be a range of answers. Does the on-the-job training typically occur during school hours, or is this something once school rings out? I'll start with that.
Through the chair. Okay, we'll start with that. Through the chair. If they're going to be working during high school, also the child labor laws come into play here. And so typically if they're employed as apprentices during high school, we would look that they would be working part-time, typically no more than 20 hours a week, because you don't want it to interfere with their academic program of study. But it's generally part-time. And then we would expect and hope that in the summertime they're working full-time and saving their money. Thank you.
Thank you. And for clarification, none of the on-the-job training would occur during regular school hours, or is that also a possibility?
Through the chair, that is also a possibility. I try not to be prescriptive. What we would be working with, we would have industry at the table, the employers, find out what they need, and it would be a group agreement between the schools, the employers, and all the partners essentially there. But I don't believe it would preclude working during the school hours as long as the student stayed current with their schoolwork. I don't see that. But the focus is that they do succeed academically. That would be the first priority.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. I think Mr. Hockla can stay online if members have further questions later. I want to go to our next presenter, Missy Fraze. Missy is the Director of Career and Technical Education for the Anchorage School District, and she is testifying on CTE opportunities and school to apprenticeship linkages that exist now, including through King Tech High School. So, Ms. Fraze, thanks for being here and educating us about Anchorage School District's current capacity in this area.
Thank you, Representative Fields, for having me here today. And thank you to Representative Bonholtz as well. I am happy to speak today on the education and industry and how we come together to help develop tomorrow's workforce. And just to lay a little groundwork on the second slide, just to show you a little bit about what we do here in Anchorage School District. We serve over 5,000 students per year in career and technical education classes. And really, we have a variety of classes. Career and technical education has evolved even over the last 25 years since I left high school, and 30 and 40 years, it's really evolved to be encompassing of some really innovative fields, future fields, biomedical. We have biomedical programs. We have computer science programs, engineering technology programs, metal fabrication, as well as our trades. And we have many, many more programs in our district covering over 14 career clusters and 30 different pathways that students can pursue while in high school. We have CTE classes in 9 high schools, including our King Tech High School, as well as 10 middle schools. So really a large opportunity for students to begin career exploration as early as 6th grade. On the next slide, what we do in our CTE programs is we help students with career exploration and development. That's a key piece. By 5th grade, students are already selecting what they don't want to do in life. And so we really want to give the opportunity for students to explore careers, get hands-on, learn from professionals, and then we help them build technical skills. Students in our program earn certifications like AWS, which is a national welding certification. We have CNA, students are certified nurse aide, which is a in-demand career in Alaska. Students earn EMTs, their CPR, first aid, OSHA 10. We have a variety of certifications our students can earn right inside our facility or in partnership with some of our post-secondary partners, such as UAA or Alaska Works Partnership. And on the next slide, I just want to explain why CTE works. We have a high graduation rate. CT, what we call concentrators. Those are students that have chosen a pathway and pursued it. 94% graduation rate for those students as opposed to 81%, which is our district average. So we know that CTE helps students find a purpose for their learning. We kind of feel like it is their light at the end of the high school tunnel. They really see a reason why they come to school. And so we want to increase these opportunities. And historically, we have had a really strong history with, on the next slide, our what we call our direct entry. At King Tech High School, formerly KCC, there has been a longstanding history with IBEW, which Mr. Hakala talked about, and the carpenters, the laborers, sheet metal, and plumbers and pipe fitters, where we, on average, 5 to 8 students might go direct entry, which means they, when they graduate from high school, they've been given a slot right into a registered apprenticeship program, which is a very difficult process and one that requires a lot of work with those partners over the course of that student's tenure in high school. And while I celebrate that and I think that's wonderful, that's less than 1% of our kids who get that opportunity, because those are our registered apprenticeship partners. And so what we really need to do is we need to expand that. We need to expand the opportunities outside of just those registered apprenticeship programs. And so on the next slide, I really, we need collaboration and partnerships through what I would call some form of state-supported coalition. And I think I'm really excited about the National Apprenticeship Act that is out there and that this conversation is happening, because we need the stakeholders at the table. We need education, we need school districts, we need DEED, we need our industry, we need commerce, and we need labor, because there are things that, there are laws in place that can be prohibitive to an apprenticeship, a youth apprenticeship program. And so we need all those people at the table to be talking about that. And what I believe is a dedicated team advancing the work. If you look at models of programs in other states that have been very successful in this work, I would point out Colorado being one of them. They really have people who are helping to make those partnerships. As a CTE director, you know, that's my job. My full-time job is, you know, innovating and promoting and keeping our programs going, and we have our teachers. But we really need somebody who's helping our industry understand more about apprenticeships and the opportunities that and benefits of an apprenticeship if we want to expand outside of our traditional, you know, 1% or less than 1%, where we have those 5 to 8 students who go direct entry. And then another thing I'd like to talk about is the graduation pathways. I think that that's an important discussion we need to have. And the question earlier was brought up about, you know, do students do this on the job, during school, after school? And I really think we need to be intentional on our in this work to make sure that apprenticeship pathways are also graduation pathways, and students can utilize their learning while they're on the job to count towards their graduation, because many of them are learning, you know, for our students who might be going into the electrical field, they're learning more advanced math than some college kids. And we need to be able to recognize those in the standards, expand opportunities for more students and not put up barriers. So thank you today for your time to share what I think is needed to help school districts engage in this work and onboard more students into apprenticeship.
Thank you so much for that presentation, Ms. Fraze. Do members have questions? Representative McCarty.
Through the chair, Missy, thank you very much for being here and sharing. I've got a number of questions, if that's fine.
Please proceed with the series.
All right. What was brought up from the other person is the ability to get recognition hours in an apprenticeship piece. So like some of the apprenticeship programs are like 4,000 to 7,000 hours towards journeyman. So in a school setting, how many realistic hours do you see a student be able to attain in the process there?
Through the chair to Representative McCarthy. So it depends on how much or what portion of a student day, you know, as a junior maybe, you might be just what you would consider one period of your day, which might be 80 hours a semester. So you could look at maybe 100 to 200 hours that year. But as a senior where you've met a lot of your graduation requirements and your schedule has more flexibility, could be 200-300 hours, 400 hours depending. And then of course you've got those summer blocks that might allow to get more hours towards those apprenticeships. So it really depends on a student's schedule and what sort of flexibility. And again, if you go back to graduation pathways, and looking at the possibility of, you know, not only is it the flexibility of the schedule, but is that apprenticeship helping to meet graduation requirements, which then increases the opportunity. Of course, staying within the regulations of the labor laws.
Okay, so following up with that, and I appreciate that, is this concept of the concurrent enrollment for their graduating, but they're getting trade recognition for that type of thing, and that's something that you're encouraging. Is that what I'm hearing?
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite understand that question. Would you mind repeating to me, please?
So, it's tough with the mask. So it's the aspect of concurrent enrollment. So they're getting education, high school education credit, and trade apprenticeship or trade credit as well. Is that what I'm hearing you're seeing as desiring?
Yes, correct. Okay. That is what would be beneficial.
All right.
And the same would be, just like the same as concurrent enrollment for a student who might be taking a high school class that also gets college credit at the same time, yes.
Okay. So through the chair, just continuation with this is that workability. So if a student is taking some classes that's concurrent enrollment, but the high school already acknowledges workability credits, and the credit is based on how many hours? One credit is based on how many hours? And how many credits can a student take outside of the school setting for you know, trade experience?
Through the chair to Representative McCarthy. So a student, one credit would it be, you know, if we kind of say it, we use the Carnegie unit, the seat time of 80 hours, give or take for what a class is worth, which for us is 0.5 credits. So one full credit is actually about 160 hours for one full credit. We do have what we call work experience credits, but it's just a general elective credit. It doesn't count towards any core academic credits. And what I see as valuable is being able to look at the standards of apprenticeships that we have out there and looking if they actually meet our education and academic standards too, so that it's not just elective credit. I think there's an opportunity to look to be a bit more innovative in how apprenticeship, the learning within an apprenticeship is accounted for in their graduation requirements.
Okay, more.
Sure.
So you said the magic word, elective credits. So how many elective credits can these students get that they could count towards workability, towards trade apprenticeship type things?
Through the chair to Representative, it depends. That's going to vary by school district. Every school district is going to have their own requirements. For us, students have, they can repeat their work experience credit, so to speak, and we also do what we call OJT, that they can repeat, so they may get 2 or 3 credits of that. But every school district would have their own guidelines for that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Do other members have questions for Ms. Fraze? Mr. Representative Nelson.
Through the chair, Ms. Fraze, I see on slide 2, you say that over 5,000 students access the CTE courses. What's the average of number of hours that apprenticeship hours that students get through throughout their time in high school?
Through the chair, we don't have registered apprentice or apprenticeship programs for our students. We do have direct entry into programs. What we would be looking at is establishing youth apprenticeships, which would allow them to begin earning those hours while in high school. And it would vary, a number of hours that they would earn would vary depending on the flexibility of the schedule and how much time they could work during a given semester or year or summer.
Through the chair, so do you have a gross estimate of, you know, how many hours a kid usually gets? Or I want to see if, you know, kids are participating and if they're getting a lot of hours or they're only liking a little bit and then they drop out. What's the average number of hours for a kid?
Through the chair, are you asking the number of hours that they sit in a CTE class or the number of hours they do work experience?
That they do work experience.
Through the chair, I couldn't give you an average. It's going to depend on the kids. And, you know, a lot of students who do work have a maximum number of hours that they can work if they are still in high school, if they're 16. The Department of Labor and Wage and Hour regulates the number of hours. So if you said they could work a maximum of 20 in a week and we have 18 weeks of school, they'd have less than 400 hours that they could work in a school year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Fraze, thanks for doing a great job explaining some complicated topics. The next presenter is Joni Simpson, Director for Career and Technical Education in Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. Ms. Simpson, thanks for the great work you do, and you can proceed with your presentation.
Great, thank you. Did my slides make it?
They are up now.
Awesome, thank you. Thank you so much for inviting us to share our stories today and to listen to, you know, what we need in order to, you know, continue to grow these programs, and I really appreciate it. And thank you to John and Missy for laying some great groundwork for me. So everything they said, yes, and I will pick it up from there. So what I want to talk to you about today is some pre-apprenticeship opportunities that we do up here in Fairbanks. We had, like Missy, we have a direct entry program into our union partners here in Fairbanks. And it's been around for about 10 or 11 years. And when we started that program, there was interest in students, you know, direct entered. And we found out after, you know, about a year or 2 years that we had a pretty high attrition rate of high school students that direct entered into apprenticeship programs. Their retention rate was about 35%. So what you're going to see here today is what we did to help change those statistics. So next slide. So we have a partnership with the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center, and it's an absolutely wonderful, amazing partnership. And we, in partnership with the training center, and it started out with the Carpenters Union, the IBEW, and the Plumbers and Pipe Fitters, created this program called the Introduction to the Trades. And the classes are taught, so there's some very significant things in here. The classes are taught at the Pipeline Training Center. So students are, you know, they leave their high schools, so they're, you know, on unfamiliar ground. They're now working with students from all over the district, you know, not just students in their high school. And the teachers that teach the program are actually, they're out directly out of the training centers of the different unions. So they you know, get to really set the stage for what it would be like to truly enter an apprenticeship and be successful. So next slide. So our, you know, we started with the three, IBEW, plumbers and pipefitters and carpenters, and we've expanded that over the years. We've added the operating engineers, we've added the laborers, and we have added process technology, which is through the University of Alaska Fairbanks. And then one of our other partners is Alaska Work Partnerships, who actually does a lot of the teaching in the carpentry program. So next slide. We are, what we have to do in the school district, our part of this partnership is we have to recruit students. So this is an example of a flyer that goes out digitally to families. We have it, it's sent out, you know, in hard copy to all of the schools. All of our CTE teachers have them posted in their classrooms and in their shops. And they, and our CTE teachers are also talking to the students all the time about the value of the program. And the students have to apply to go, you know, to the program. And, you know, when we first started the program, you know, we were hoping that we'd get enough applications to fill a class. And now we have very extensive wait lists because the value that, happens on the other end. And, you know, so the students get this type of material. So they're, you know, seeing people that look like them, that are successful in the programs, and there's, you know, we always, you know, lots of action things, you know, to recruit students because they like that. High school kids like that. And we also put a lot of information on there because what the our training partners do when they set up these classes is they're setting up a real experience for the students. You know, oftentimes public schools are not set up to teach, you know, those skills that students need to be successful in like an apprenticeship. And so, you know, when we looked at those, you know, those low retention rates that we had early on, you know, we'd heard from, you know, the students and we heard from people in the, you know, the apprenticeship training programs that it wasn't that they didn't have skills. They had skills, but they really struggled with the big switch, you know, to that social environment and that work environment. So these classes are set up so we tell them straight up, there's no excused absence. You know, you can be absent for school and nothing really happens to you, or you can be late and nothing really happens. But in this program, this, you know, you have to be there every day unless you're extremely ill. And then you need to communicate with your training person, not your parents, that you're ill and, you know, come up with a way to make things up. They get the taste of, you know, maybe working for somebody who's kind of grumpy or says a swear word now and then, or, you know, runs a fast shop, or, you know, the idea that, you know, if you have time to lean, you clean, you stay on task at all time. And it's really interesting to watch the students as they come into the program. You know, they might be, you know, a little bit nervous about what's going to happen. And then at the end, they are walking tall and, you know, they feel so good about themselves. And at the end of the class, they have the opportunity to apply for direct entry into, you know, the apprenticeship of their choice. And And it's kind of cool because now they've had like this whole semester-long job interview and, you know, learn some skills. And, you know, we always have about 10 to 15 students at direct enter a year. And now the statistics of retention are, they've, you know, varied from about 70% to 75% retention. And that's higher than the adult population that comes, that they bring in. So the magic is in this pre-apprenticeship experience. So next slide. So the classes that we offer are the electrical class taught by the IVEW, welding taught by plumbers and pipe fitters, carpentry taught by Alaska Work Partnership, and sometimes they'll get somebody from the union to help them. We have a laborer academy. It's the coolest thing on the face of the earth. The kids are, they're learning how to build scaffolds. They're learning about pouring concrete. They're learning about, you know, just a wide variety of things. We have a heavy equipment maintenance program, which this summer, because of COVID, we couldn't teach it during the school year. So we're going to do an intensive after school, and so that heavy equipment maintenance program is they're going to spend some time doing maintenance stuff, but they're actually going to be able to get out on some equipment, so that's pretty exciting. And then we have process technology, and that's the first class that in the process tech associates program that the students will take, and they earn three university credits for that. And, you know, like I said, in all the classes, it's much more than skill building. It's learning about life. It's learning how to work in a true working environment. It's, you know, just building that confidence that they can succeed, you know, if they get into the apprenticeships. Next slide. And the reward of the program is for the students. These are students that have direct entered. The unions are always great about getting them lots of swag, and we make a really, really big deal of it. It's in the school board room. School board members come, parents. It's a really, really big deal. And then we also have a celebration at the Fairbanks Pipeline Training Center. Next slide. So we want to expand. We, you know, if we could create, you know, a dozen more opportunities like this for our students, we would be extremely thrilled. Students and parents, they are so engaged, and, you know, they want these opportunities for their students. But we do need, you know, I agree with Missy, we need that sustainable body that helps develop them and all those different people at the table. Because what happens if, you know, we're just trying to, you know, get things done up here in Fairbanks, or Missy's trying to do it down there in Anchorage, and, you know, like one of us leaves or, you know, is gone for a while, you know, programs go away. And that, you know, we have to have something that helps, you know, bring all those industries to the table. And, you know, it's kind of the glue that keeps things moving. And yeah, that's what I have. So, are there any questions?
I'm on hold. I do have questions.
Representative McCarty.
Okay, thank you so much for being here, and got a number of questions. And I've heard some great things about what's going on up there in Fairbanks with this. Like the ASD shared of the percent that go into apprenticeship programs, what's your percent that you're seeing?
You know, we, oh, through the chair, excuse me, we put about between 72 and 80 students through the intro to the trades classes, and we direct enter, I think our average is about 15 a year. So, you know, we have, gosh, you know, maybe 5,000 high school students. So, you know, it is a low number. And I think the reason for the low numbers is not because of interest. It's because of capacity. And I'll tell you, if we didn't have the Pipeline Training Center here, it would be, it would be really, really difficult if we had to work with each individual union. But having them as that central place, pulling things together, that really, really helps a lot. So it's just capacity. We have more interest than we do seats in programs like this. So I don't know if that answers your question.
It does. Can I add on to the chair? So do you have the ability to do cohort type things so that you could have more capacity, but doing it in a cohort manner rather than an hourly classroom manner?
Through the chair, we do that with our certified nursing assistant program. We do a cohort model with CTC, like that. So, but still, the capacity there is 20 students, and I think that's the big thing is, you need more instructors, you need more facilities, you need more everything. Because, even in these courses in, the incredible facilities, they can only handle about 15 at a time. And we've talked about it, with Chad at the Pipeline Training Center, who's always interested in looking at ways to expand it. We haven't put that together yet.
Okay. And follow up with that, you mentioned something about the number of students that want to get in. What is your waiting list procedure? How do students get into programs?
Through the chair, there's an application process that they have to go through. Mainly, how interested are you, that sort of thing. When the students are selected, for that class, which is usually 12 to 15 students in each one, then we have, kind of a rank order of students that are waitlisted, ones that, are extremely interested, they have a little bit of knowledge. And we also do letters of recommendation. So, sometimes you'll get an application that, if you looked at it face value, you might go, what? But they have an outstanding letter of recommendation from, a teacher or, somebody that they've worked for, that really stands up for that student and says, this would change their life. We've talked about this and this will be life changing. Well, that catches our attention, and oftentimes then we'll go have a we will call and have a conversation with that, that reference. So, we'd love to be able to place all of them. And then if somebody drops out for, whatever reason, but it has to be within that first week because, the union trainers really want those students, to stay, they build, they really bond and build a community with each group of students. So, having somebody come in like at 4 weeks is too late. But then, we immediately within that waitlist time, we just go right down the list. If somebody can't do it or changes their mind or whatever, we immediately get, the students, that are on the waitlist. And we always try to place seniors first. It's open to juniors and seniors. We always place seniors first because they're going to be launched into the world, and then we have conversations with those juniors that yay, you applied and you had a great application, and make sure that you do reapply next year. And we keep track of those students, so like when I go out to high schools and do presentations, I might track a student down and say, that's a junior, and say, your application was very impressive, and let's keep in touch and that sort of thing. So trying to keep them engaged.
Thank you.
Representative Sponholz has a question, actually bouncing back to Missy Fraze, and then we'll go to Representative Shiragi with a question for Ms. Simpson. Ms. Fraze, are you still on the line to answer a question?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Fraze, you said something earlier in talking about having 5 to 8 direct entry, you know, graduates going directly into an apprenticeship program. And was that just for folks at King Tech, or is that for the entire Anchorage School District?
Through the chair, to Representative Spotholtz, that's just King Tech. That's the only school we have with the direct entry with any of those trades. So it would be out of the students in the particular classes that aligned. So that would be our welding, instructional electricity, carpentry. It would be through those programs.
All right, thank you.
Representative Shockey.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. my question is related to, and I think I might have partially answered my own question here looking at slide 4 on the Welding Academy, but who bears the cost of these CTE programs? It looks like maybe partially Department of Labor and Workforce Development, but could you just speak to that briefly?
Sure. That's the win-win for the school district. The Pipeline Training Center writes a grant through the Department of Labor each year, so they cover the cost of the facilities and the instructors and the materials. So, you know, really our skin in the game is, you know, getting the students to them, being the liaison between, you know, like parents and the instructors, doing all the logistics behind the scenes. And, you know, the cost is with the exception of, I think there's like a $7,000 cost that comes out of our budget to pay for, and I believe it's part of the salary of the individual from Alaska Works Partnership. So, if we didn't have that, this would be an impossible program for us to run.
Representative Snyder.
Thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Simpson, and I appreciate if I might need to redirect this question, but I'm curious, is it correct to assume that most of the apprenticeship programs for youth still in high school, they are paid? Is that correct?
Through the chair, no, our students are not paid. These are pre-apprenticeship opportunities. These are not registered youth apprenticeships. So they earn a half a credit of elective credit for participating in this program.
Okay. And it sounds like you don't have any concern about interest. The demand is high. But I was also wondering, is there any concern that there could be some competition from other high school students who might also be in need of earning a paycheck after school? Do you see that being a conflict or a challenge that's hard to overcome in recruitment?
Through the chair, no. That's never come up.
Thank you.
And just for clarification, so a registered apprentice by definition is employed, is earning a wage. A pre-apprentice preparing to enter a registered apprenticeship program can just be a student who is not being paid. Thank you, Ms. Simpson. This time I want to move on. We've heard a lot about some of the traditional building trades, which are Alaska's longest standing apprenticeships, connections to the school district. Now, Mari Sell and Hilton Halleck with the Alaska Primary Care Association and Alaska Pacific University, respectively, are going to talk about a newer apprenticeship program, which is linked with the secondary school system in a non-traditional apprenticeship field, healthcare, and also has college credit aligned with it. So it's really a model of how we can expand apprenticeship to non-traditional fields. So Ms. Sell and Dr. Halleck, thanks for being here, and please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Mari Sell. I'm the Workforce Development Director at the Alaska Primary Care Association, and I will be co-presenting with Dr. Hilton Halleck with APU. If you would advance our slide to slide 2. So the Alaska Primary Care Association, we are a member organization. We support federally qualified health centers, also known as community health centers. There are 28 health center organizations across Alaska that represent over 150 clinics, health centers across the state. So in 2017, our organization recognized the potential for the registered apprenticeship model to be a real advantage to our community health centers. As you well know, we have very rural, remote health centers that take care of Alaskans across the state. They, of course, need a qualified workforce to staff every part of their operations, but we don't have community colleges all over our state providing big classes of CCMAs, for example. So this was a real opportunity. We partnered with the Department of Labor to start this registered apprenticeship program. And at the same time, we also started providing pre-apprenticeship training programs. We call them PATH Academies. And these PATH Academies help people who are unemployed or underemployed, who have little or no experience in healthcare, gain some basic competencies. We train them in things like basic life support, mental health first aid, de-escalation techniques. Also, we do a lot of work in providing them with soft skills training so they're good employees when they enter a healthcare or a behavioral health or a human services employment. The apprenticeship model has been successful for us. Currently, we have registered apprenticeship programs in these occupations listed here on this slide. We train community health workers. We train medical assistants. We train medical admin assistants, which are also known as medical secretaries. We train biller coder specialists, electronic health record specialists. We're very excited that within a month or so, we're going to start training direct support professionals or disability support professionals, also known as DSPs. This is a job category that is very much needed in Alaska. We are also planning to start a pharmacy technician apprenticeship coming this fall. Next slide, please. So we currently have about 78 apprentices, and this is kind of a squishy number because it includes individuals that we are actively currently enrolling for this cohort that is starting over the next month. And we have apprentices all over the state. We have apprentices at Samuelson Hospital in New Keokuk, Crossroad Medical Center in Glen Allen, Ululik Family Health Services in Alaska, and more. We recently started partnering with Providence Alaska Medical Center to train community health workers in Anchorage, and this is a very promising partnership as they have plans to train many community health workers starting in the Anchorage area. And I believe our program has been successful in part because of the unique relationships that we have with our community health centers. They have been willing employers. They've been willing to try this new model of employment. Apprenticeship is not a typical training model in healthcare, and yet we've been able to be successful. Our program is delivered in an online format, but the classes take place in real time with live instructors. These instructors care about each apprentice. They follow them and follow their progress and make sure they're on track. And the students are simultaneously learning skills, putting that theory into practice at their clinic or hospital setting, which we call that on-the-job learning or OJL. And that's monitored by a mentor that works with the apprentice right there on site with them. Our apprentices earn a national certification in most cases from the National Health Career Association, which is a certifying body. They also earn a certification from the federal apprenticeship program. And finally, that last bullet, they all are also able to earn an undergraduate certificate from Alaska Pacific University. And Dr. Hilton Halleck will speak on this partnership, which has been a really great partnership for us.
Hamilton.
Thanks, Mari. Can we have the next slide, please? My name is Hilton Halleck. I serve as the provost of Alaska Pacific University, and APU is delighted to work with APCA to offer college credit and degree programs which integrate the registered apprenticeships. The health occupations program at APU includes an undergraduate certificate that's aligned with the registered apprenticeships listed here on the slide. We plan to expand these offerings as APCA develops their apprenticeship programs. We've been in conversation about the DSP and the farm tech program already. We also offer an associate's degree in health occupations that integrates the credits of the apprenticeship and the undergraduate certificate. So the certificate program, the undergraduate certificate programs, typically last 1 to 2 years, depending on which concentration you're in. So if it's a 2,000-hour a year, one-year apprenticeship, it's a one-year undergraduate certificate option for us. If it's a two-year medical clinical medical assistant, it's a two-year certificate program for us. The academic credits that we award take into account both the didactic portion of the apprenticeship as well as the instructional time that students learn on the full-time on-the-job training. The participants in APCA's apprenticeship program are typically working full-time in the community health centers. The way it works is that we created a framework of courses that are common to each of the concentrations within the certificate. So they all have some coursework around the skills and concepts that are related to the field that they're working in. They all have some coursework that's related to policy, to ethics, to organizational skills, to interpersonal skills, and so forth. But those are weighted differently depending on which concentration you're in. So if you're an electronic health record specialist, you may spend more time on policy and regulations than, say, a community health worker. Our faculty have worked with APCA instructors and staff to align syllabi and learning outcomes and decide which terms to register them in and work through admissions processes and so forth. To promote student success, of course, that's our end goal, and to make it clear and accessible for students, but also to ensure that APU meets our own academic standards and things like the regulations for satisfactory academic progress for financial aid and things like that, and to make sure that we're supporting APCA's expectations for their apprentices as well. So can I have the next slide, please? As I mentioned, we have both an undergraduate certificate and an associate's degree in health occupations. As we've built out our degree programs, our health-related degree programs over the last couple of years, we've tried to scaffold them so students can easily move on to the next degree when they're ready. We know that students stop in and out of college, very much so in Alaska. In fact, we have over 300,000 people in Alaska who have some college and no degree, and if they stop out for a long time, it's often hard to use those credits that they've earned to transfer to a degree program. But if you lock in a credential, if you lock in a certificate or an associate's degree, the receiving school is more likely to accept your credits and transfer. So we have scaffolded our programs. All APCA apprentices have a high school degree or a GED, so that's why we're starting with the undergraduate certificate. But the degree pathway for health occupations is they could earn the undergraduate certificate that pulls through to an associate's degree in either health occupations or potentially community health if they're a community health worker. And then they can go on to bachelor's degrees in any of our programs, but most specifically we think they'll be interested in health sciences, environmental public health, business administration. We have a concentration in healthcare management. So depending on whether they're interested in more of the management side of healthcare or the clinical side or the field work side, they can choose a path that works for them. And we just are bringing on a health programs advisor to help them navigate those pathways. So I will stop there and entertain any questions
that you may have for both of us.
Well, thanks, Ms. Sell and Dr. Halleck. I guess I just want to note, for a long time, we've forced graduating seniors to make a choice between going to college and foregoing income, and in many cases taking on debt or working to support themselves and their family without an option to complete a college degree. And what's so remarkable about this APCA-APU partnership is that we allow hardworking Alaskans, wherever they live, including in rural Alaska, to both have a living wage job and progress toward earning a college degree. And this is really a model we should hold out for other industries and other occupations and other employers. So thank you for showing how it can be done. Do members have questions for Dr. Halleck or Ms. Sell? Representative McCarty.
All right. Through the chair, thank you very much for being here. And Dr. Halleck, looking at the slide four under undergraduate certificate options, how many of these programs have high school students, secondary education students in them?
Through the chair, none do, because APCA requires their apprentices to have high school degrees or GEDs.
Okay, so through the chair, it's my understanding that as we're looking at this in the pre-apprentice or trade training, that someone has to get a GED or a high school diploma to be even considered for this type of program. Is that correct?
Hey, could I jump in there and ask Ms. Sell? Ms. Sell, could you elaborate on how the PATH academies, which are in the secondary system, link up with jobs and college pathways upon graduation?
Yes, I'd be happy to. So our program is for adults, just to be clear. These are registered healthcare apprenticeships that are geared towards adults. And that does include our PATH Academy. We do have PATH Academy-like training for high school students. They are not they don't meet the standards for a quality pre-apprenticeship training or a QPAP, but they are they do very similar training to our PATH or our adult PATH academies. In healthcare, it is going to be very difficult for a person under the age of 18 to find any kind of employment. I can't think of an employer that will take somebody in that will hire somebody that is under the age of 18. I don't think that precludes opportunities for students to get prepared so that once they are 18, they're ready to go. In fact, we are working in partnership with Alaska Works. We started a youth apprenticeship program where we are training youth 18 to 24 to enter these apprenticeships.
Follow up.
Yeah, so follow up through the chair. So is it also that there may be some federal OSHA or even state statutes or rules, laws that prohibit training someone that's under the age of 18? Is that what you're experiencing as well?
Through the chair, yes, that is accurate. There are HIPAA rules that must be followed when you're in a medical training facility. I do think that there may be opportunities, perhaps in the human services field, for people who are for kids under the age of 18. Possibly, but we haven't explored that at this time. We're pretty busy expanding our registered apprenticeship program as it is for adults and for youth 18 to 24 at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and thanks, Representative McCarty, for asking that question. I think as we look at potential legislation, we have to sort of recognize that some occupations can actually start an apprenticeship while in high school, and others, for a variety of reasons, may need a linkage agreement where they actually start the apprenticeship after high school, but still can have a valuable pre-apprenticeship in high school, and it's going to depend on the sector and the occupation. Representative Nelson had a question.
Yes, through the chair, Ms. Sell, Have you seen, with the current COVID pandemic going on, have you seen an increase in interest in the apprenticeship program in any of the healthcare-related areas?
Through the chair, that is an interesting question. I will say that our fall cohort was quite large this last fall, despite because of the COVID epidemic. It's really hard to say. There was a lot of shuffling that had to happen at our health centers over the summer. There were some health centers where staff didn't, they couldn't run their clinic the way they normally would. With vaccine rollout recently, clinics have been extraordinarily busy, and most clinics are now back to full capacity or more than full capacity. And so we've actually seen that in this cohort, a small dip in the number of registered apprentices that were able to sign on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks again to Dr. Halleck and Ms. Sell for your work to create a model program in a very short amount of time. We're now going to go to Pam Klein and Ryan Andrew, both of whom are with IBEW. IBEW represents employees at Matsu Regional Hospital. Matsu Regional Hospital and their partner union are another example of a new apprenticeship program on which Ms. Klein works. So, Ms. Klein, if you could proceed with your testimony, and thanks for being here to share.
Thank you, Representative Fields. Hi, I'm Pam Klein, and I'm an IBEW business rep, and I have represented the Matsu Regional employees since 2008. I worked there from 2000 to 2008 as a certified pharmacy tech. We realized that we'd had a problem recruiting operating room techs and sterile processing techs. We have no schools in this state for that type of class, and people were leaving the state to go take those classes, and then they were not returning. So all of the hospitals realized that the operating room, the SPD, those positions were a problem. We were paying travelers to come up, work up here, you know, make money and leave. And so we had John Hoffler contacted us, and then we had a sit-down conversation with management, who we have a great relationship with, and said, you know, what can we do to train our own and keep them here? So we looked at the positions that were hard for the managers to fill, and then we talked with the Department of Labor on could we make that apprenticeship work? Was there a registered program for it, and what could we do? So in 2017, we started a surgery tech or OR tech program along with a sterile processing tech program. Because we had 350 qualified employees or close to qualified employees at Matsu Regional, we did in-house first applicants. We had over 40 applicants for the first opening of apprenticeship. Because SPD follows up, is a pre-apprentice kind of to OR tech, you could make a step up in your career. We let those people who wanted apply for both. We ended up doing two OR techs and five or six sterile processing techs over a couple 2-year program. Also in 2017, we created the very first MRI technician program that's in the whole United States. It took a lot of work. We had to convince a program that normally only does in-person training in the lower 48 that they could provide online training to us. We have the mentors to make that happen on our end, and we successfully worked to create and complete the first MRI tech apprenticeship program. Then in 2019, well, probably in 2018, we realized that we had, the state of Alaska had an issue with mental health and the needs of facilities to take care of that. Matsu Regional's ER was being overwhelmed, and they applied for a certificate of need and ended up being able to open a behavioral health wing. At that point, management came to us, and we decided to let's create a behavioral health tech apprenticeship program so that we have the staff to staff the new wing. We opened that up. We did have some in-house applicants, and then we opened it up to out-of-staff applicants. So we ended up with 16 behavioral health applicants. At first, we moved that up to about 18. It went back down to 16, but overall, we graduated 16 behavioral health techs from that program. Some have stayed at MATSU, and some have moved on. Our surgery techs, our OR techs, our sterile processing techs, and MRI techs have all stayed at MATSU Regional. So the benefit of that program was they were being paid good benefits, good wage, stepped up through the program, and they never had to lose employment. What I would say to a new apprenticeship program is, yes, the only real qualification was the high school diploma and being 18 years old. But we had many overqualified applicants for those specialty programs. So we ended up putting into the program people who already were EMTs, or they were ER techs, or CNAs. So when we didn't necessarily have a high school to workforce apprenticeship program, we had the registered apprenticeship, but I can see how it could easily happen. If we can get people in pre-apprentice through different programs of CNAs have been mentioned, EMTs, pharmacy techs, then they have the qualifications to apply for the programs or come to work at a hospital and then apply when those programs open up. I think that the more knowledge that is out there about how successful it can be, it will be more successful. But hospitals are not used to apprenticeship programs. Some of the mentors that we needed to be on board, you know, they went to a college or a university and did it the hard way. And so for them, having an apprentice on the job, being paid, didn't seem right until, and then when we got them on board, it was a huge success. At the hospital, one of the issues that, where we can't have a lot of them is because it has to be a one-to-one. The MRI mentor had to have a certain certification to even be the mentor. So our apprentice had to, you know, copy her schedule for a year. The OR tech is, you know, a one-to-one in an operating room. They're doing their online at home. But the hospital relationship and the apprenticeship we created, we talked about the online, the on-the-job training, and so it was a huge success. We haven't had any more apprentices currently because they don't need any. They don't want to really put the they don't want to train and lose the people because we don't have positions for them. So I think that's a little bit of a double-edged sword. But I think if we could convince all of the hospitals, all of the surgery centers, pharmacies, all of them, that apprenticeship does work, they benefit, people stay. You know, you provide a good job, they're going to stay. And they're going to stay in Alaska. It seems that the people we knew were leaving the state were not coming back. They were getting jobs in, you know, the town they were going to school in. And so then they found out to be a traveler, they could make more money and travel around the United States. So keeping them here was important to us. And so we're really proud of it, and we're hoping to continue as we see fit to more programs. I think there's a lot of opportunity out there. That's all I have, Representative Fields. I know Ryan, if you want Ryan to talk first, or I can take questions.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Yes, thank you, Representative Fields, and thank you to all of the members of the Labor and Commerce Committee for allowing me to speak today. My name is Ryan Andrew. I currently work as a business representative with the IBW here in Anchorage, and I wanted to talk a little bit about my experience with registered apprenticeship in particular, a little bit about my background. And so prior to working as a business representative, I actually had an opportunity to teach apprenticeship class at our apprenticeship program's classroom. in the school. And the IBW NECA apprenticeship is one of those that has kind of two components to it, and that's one portion is on-the-job training, the other portion is the classroom instruction. And so that was what I was able to teach in the classroom to those apprentices. But really what I wanted to talk about is going back to the beginning, you know, first and foremost, I'm a journeyman electrician, and I really owe that opportunity to be able to come into the apprenticeship to King Tech High School, and at the time it was King Career Center. But I was afforded an opportunity after taking the electrical course there at King Career Center to be direct entered into the IBW NECA apprenticeship. And it was a tremendous opportunity. You know, the IBW has a longstanding, strong relationship with the Anchorage School District and with King Tech in particular. And so, you know, those opportunities for those students have really, you know, meaningful impacts on their lives. And I know that, you know, most years that we accept new apprentices into our program, we, you know, there's an event that gets held called the Signing Day, and it's really remarkable to watch all those young high school students signing their apprenticeship agreements with their respective trades and other industries, you know, really, really kicking off their careers and their lives. So I would just agree, you know, earlier Ms. Fraze mentioned that these opportunities, there's room for expansion. I would agree with that statement. I think that, you know, the more industries that can be involved with King Tech in particular, and, you know, even if there were room for expansion to while they're, you know, currently enrolled in high school, and as you mentioned, Representative Fields, there may be some limitations on, you know, which programs can run concurrently with, you know, the students still being in high school. You know, there may be some other options where, you know, the students can gain some credit toward their apprenticeship, either, you know, classroom hours or something to that effect. So certainly think there's room for expansion, and I know that the IBW can, you know, we plan on continuing that partnership with the school district and with King Tech. So that is kind of what I had to share today. I want to say thank you again to all the committee members, and would make myself also available for any questions that you might have.
Thanks. Do members have questions for Mr. Andrew or Ms. Klein? Okay, seeing none, the final presenter today is former Labor Commissioner Heidi Dragas, and I asked Ms. Dragas to be here today because she was commissioner when the APCA AP Youth program started, when the Matsu Regional Hospital apprenticeship program started, and as we look at the high likelihood of additional federal grant support for apprenticeship, I thought she would be a good person to talk about how we position ourselves to capitalize on that opportunity and how we continue expanding on the apprenticeship system. And I would note that as we work on legislation, we will also have the Departments of Labor and Education here to talk about that legislation, and the University of Alaska system to weigh in on that legislation. So none of the testimony today is at the exclusion of those groups. We'll be hearing from them on the draft legislation. So with that, Ms. Dragas, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Fields and Sponholz. It's nice to see you all in House Labor and Commerce. I've spent many hours in that room, and it's great to see the House back to work. For the record, my name is Heidi Dragas. I am an attorney and lobbyist who lives here in Juneau, and I primarily represent building trade unions. Previously, as Representative Fields said, I served as commissioner of the Department of Labor and Workforce Development for Governor Bill Walker. My entire professional career has been dedicated to advancing the interests of Alaska's workers. Alaska has a long and proud history of registered apprenticeship across the state. And when I began my tenure as commissioner, as you all know, we were facing very steep budget cuts. Many of our critical workforce development funds were on the chopping block. So we made a decision very quickly to seek as many federal dollars as possible to continue to fund these programs and policies.
and we were committed to both expanding and elevating registered apprenticeship here in Alaska. In Alaska, apprenticeship has really flourished in the construction industry. Registered apprenticeship programs in the building trades, as previous presenters said, they're managed by joint labor and management committees, and they are truly the gold standard for model apprenticeship programs in this state and across the country. But as so many presenters said, registered apprenticeship works in many industries. At the department, we focused our efforts on expanding registered apprenticeship in high-growth industries like healthcare, aviation, and maritime. Over the course of 4 years, our department received more than $20 million in competitive federal grant funds to boost workforce development, and we leveraged much of these dollars to expand registered apprenticeship in Alaska. We have some terrific programs in Alaska, as you heard, that reach out to young Alaskans and encourage them to explore vocational careers. But I fear that we're not doing enough and we're missing opportunities right now to reach young people. Studies have shown that kids should be exposed as young as elementary school to career opportunities, certainly by junior high and high school. Alaska's youth should have broad exposure to different career paths, including paths in vocational programs through registered apprenticeship. One of my biggest frustrations when I was commissioner, and still now, is the continued mindset of some parents, teachers, policymakers, and school counselors that a successful student is a student who's on a college track. College is a terrific path for some young Alaskans. It was the path that I was on, but it's not the track for everyone. It's not the path that a majority of Alaskans embark on or even complete. And when we fail to present other options to young people, or we fail to present vocational options on an equal footing with college, we are losing a valuable opportunity to grow Alaska's skilled workforce. And we're missing a critical opportunity to provide a career pathway for Alaskans in the vocational trades. Apprenticeship leads to rewarding careers. These are careers with good pay, with healthcare benefits, and opportunities for advancement. The biggest complaint that I hear from employers and young Alaskans is simply that they don't know about these opportunities. On average, apprenticeship completers earn more than $300,000 more over the span of their lifetimes than peers who don't complete apprenticeships. I'm hopeful, and I'm glad that the committee is discussing school-to-apprenticeship programs. I think this is a great time to do it. I think right now is a critical time to strengthen linkages between the secondary school system and apprenticeships, and to ensure that we're supporting employers who choose to use apprenticeship for developing their own workforces. And as we work, I hope, to expand apprenticeship in Alaska, I also think it's a really good time to push for more college credit through apprenticeship and dual credit for CTE programs, including apprenticeship. As you know, the Department of Education, the Department of Labor Workforce Development, and the university all have critical roles to play in this endeavor. The point is that registered apprenticeship works. Over the years, the federal government has increasingly promoted registered apprenticeship as the premier program for workforce development. The Obama and Trump administrations both embraced and promoted apprenticeship, and it's clear that the Biden administration plans to continue this effort. And because of this, I feel confident that federal programs and policies to promote and expand apprenticeship can and will benefit Alaska, but only if we position ourselves to take advantage of them, and that's the key. I want to thank you for tackling this issue today. I wish you a lot of luck as you move through this session, and I'm happy to take any questions that you may have.
Thanks, Ms. Dragas. Do members have questions for Ms. Dragas or any other panelists? Representative Von Holz and then Representative Nelson.
All right, thank you, Ms. Dragas. Through the chair, do you have any specific recommendations for the legislature that we need to take action on so that we can be prepared for additional funding and opportunities coming from the federal government?
Ms. Von Holz, since you are co-chair, I guess I don't have to say through the chair.
Let me reflect on that. I do think that there are certain things that we can do to encourage employers to utilize apprenticeships, those have been discussed in the past. I know that there are bills that are being floating around right now about enhancing school to apprenticeship opportunities or opportunities in secondary school. I'll reflect on that a little bit more and maybe come back to the committee with other recommendations. But I think that a lot of the ones that are out there right now are good conversation starters in this area.
Sure.
Yeah, I just have a comment. I think that in hearing a lot of the testimony today, there is some really great apprenticeship programs that are out there, but it's clear to me that there is so much more that we could do if we were more ambitious for ourselves in the state of Alaska. And we know that not everybody wants to go to college. We also know that you can be an apprentice and go to college. Like, it's not actually an either or scenario. Yep. And, I would love to see us, more aggressively promoting apprenticeship from a very young age. Young people, as was said earlier, start ruling out career choices very early. And if we don't expose them to a lot of opportunities when they're young, then we miss out on that. And there are great examples of programs throughout the state that we heard about today that have been very successful in expanding apprenticeship into the health careers, which are, one of the few sectors of our economy that hasn't been devastated by, COVID-19, for example, and it's really only a growth industry because we're all just getting older, right? As well as other options, but I think it's going to take some ambition and increased coordination amongst, between public education and employers and higher education. I'd love to see the University of Alaska be more ambitious as it relates to apprenticeship in the state of Alaska. There was a time back in the late 90s and into the early 2000s that the University of Alaska was very ambitious in advancing vocational and career technical education and dramatically expanded the number of programs that it offered and partnered with industry. And since then, in part due to budget cuts over time, those programs, which are expensive, have been, have been cut, and because of a lack of focus as well, I would say. So I'm excited about the opportunities, but I think that, what this tells me today, what this presentation says to me today, is that we have a lot of opportunity, but also maybe some work to do to try to bring people together to, create more pathways for Alaskans to get great jobs.
Thanks, Representative Bonholz. Representative Nelson.
And if I can respond to that just really quickly.
Go ahead.
Representative Bonholz. Or Chair Bonholz, one thing I will say is I think you hit the nail on the head. The university has been a terrific champion for career and technical education, has worked, at least in my tenure at the department, was a terrific partner along with us to expand career and technical education. And there was a lot of coordination involved there. We updated the Alaska CTE plan in cooperation with the university, and I get the impression from Interim President Pitney that the university is laser focused on workforce development and meeting the needs of Alaskan employers. And so I think right now it's a great time to have some conversations with the university. I think that as far as some things that the legislature could do, certainly it never hurts to pass a resolution to support registered apprenticeship. That might be one option. But I think a lot of it is really encouraging this administration to really go after those federal dollars. I mean, that really was a huge help for us as we were facing severe budget cuts. And they're out there when you put together a good grant application. There are really terrific opportunities. And I have a feeling, as I mentioned in my comments, that there are going to be a lot more opportunities for federal funding through apprenticeship and other workforce development programs. And right now, when budgets are super, super tight, I would strongly encourage policymakers to look at those federal funding opportunities.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Mr. Igus, early in your testimony, you said along the lines of kids in elementary schools should be exposed to apprenticeship. Is that your opinion, or do you have a source to back that up? I just wonder where you got that that claim from.
Through the chair, Representative Nelson, I think what I said is that kids should be exposed as young as elementary school to career opportunities. So whether that is, frankly, apprenticeship or any number of different types of career opportunities, I think it's and I can look for those studies. That was something that I remember reading and reiterating when I was at the department. But in any event, that is anecdotal from what I remember, something I repeated a lot when I was testifying before this committee as commissioner. But I'm happy to provide you with some of that information.
That would be perfect. Thank you.
Representative McCarty, I think, had a question.
Yes, I do, and very much appreciate you testifying here. We've talked quite a bit of things regarding the development of HB 108. And in that, you shared many times the question of your recommendation dealing with labor ability or being able to get trade ability because of an age. And so there's certain restrictions federally, even maybe restrictions on the statewide. Can you elaborate on that?
Through the chair, Representative McCarty, I think that John Hakala spoke to this a little bit, but so I would defer to him on some of the federal restrictions, but there are restrictions on entering certain apprenticeships, age restrictions. I think a lot of them are 18 years old, and I think there are different workarounds, pre-apprenticeship programs certainly. There are some, state and federal labor laws that restrict the age that children can work. And I don't have those off the top of my head, but, those are in statute, and I'm happy to provide those, to the committee. There are certain age restrictions, but I think that through some creativity, there are ways to work around that to ensure that these young people get exposure to apprenticeship opportunities and other opportunities through career and technical education.
Mr. Hakala, if you're still online, do you want to address this issue of, federal statute, how early can someone start a registered apprenticeship? How early can someone start a pre-apprenticeship? And to the extent you want to talk about, how that might differ by occupation.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative McCarty and others. The federal minimum age for a registered apprenticeship is 16 years, and that's primarily employment. And so that's the federal regulation. That's what we have to work within. And whenever I'm working with a company on an apprenticeship program, I always refer them to the Alaska child labor laws, which do allow ages all the way from 14, I guess through 18, however they make that cutoff, and they decide or they have laws about what work can be performed or not. So we always have to operate within those parameters. The decision to hire a student, I think, prior to 16 years, I think in the pre-apprenticeship phase, it's they're learning on-the-job activities. It's unpaid, and I think once you are offered the employment, again, 16 years of age is where we've always worked from in the apprenticeship world. I know kids can work younger if they have a signature from their parents, et cetera. And in the pre-apprenticeship environment, there's nothing saying in our current regulations that a pre-apprenticeship cannot work and have a real job. It's just that once they come into the registered apprenticeship program, they need to be 16 years of age. Again, the National Apprenticeship Act is in the process of getting revised. I think it's important to pay attention to the youth side of that discussion. On our a couple of days ago, I was talking with a strategic director of a John Deere company out in Iowa, because Iowa has a very robust high school apprenticeship system. And so I was chatting with them, and they're the largest employer in Iowa, and Iowa has 5 million people. But what struck me was I asked them all the general questions. What was your strategic decision to start working with high school students? And basically they had no choice, he said, because it's a population that they would otherwise lose. If they don't engage them during high school, then they're out in the street. I would call that kicking soda cans, because they might think they're going to college. They decide after a year or two they're not, so they're, you know, chasing jobs until they might find back around to them in John Deere to get hired again years later. He said 5 to 7 years later. Mm-hmm. So they saw this as an opportunity, number one, to stay in business, because there's a critical shortage of qualified workers. And so they, you know, their business model incorporates apprenticeship at the high school and middle school levels, for them it's apprenticeship and the exposure. One thing that just struck me, though, because I was kind of challenging him, I says, well, in Alaska, it's very typical for employers to say that 18 years is the limit. Although I've worked with companies and they can hire their son or daughter at, you know, 16 without blinking an eye. And I think we need to really look at this, because they're hiring these high school kids through their factories and all the way from, you know, CNC machinery to welding and these other things. And what struck me is he mentioned the child labor laws are there, and that helps them, because it's a safe work environment with the registered apprenticeship inclusion in there. But he said these school to apprentices provide full value work to our company. And so it really comes down to talking to the different industries and companies and find out, really, is it 18 because it's always been 18, or can you take some youth in there and work them in certain areas of the occupations and do it safely and productively for your company? And so I think you can have younger people, but I think this larger body needs to get together and have those discussions and then create that, you know, template and opportunity, to do so.
So I have a follow-up there through the chair, and you said the magic word of safety. And this is one of the things I'm hearing, is that there's an age restriction that's been set in federal OSHA, or even maybe state, and if you could address that, or we could come to that another day. But that the issue is of age rather than safety, and if we can make the issue about safety, that maybe some of these things of trade learning, because I'm understanding they can't even use certain equipment until they reach that age. And if that could be brought back to safety, then maybe they could be learning those things at earlier ages in high school.
Through the chair to Representative McCarty, that's why the child labor laws are so important, and it's pamphlet 200, and perhaps Commissioner Dragas could add on. She, I'm sure, knows more about that framework than I do. But what it does is it because of the structure and the ratio of mentors to apprentices that Ms. Sell talked about, it's a safe working environment. And so that's what if you call it an exception or allowance within the child labor law, they'll allow that for registered apprenticeship programs where otherwise they would not. And so that's why the child labor laws become so important here in the discussion. And every apprenticeship program, there's a section or a section, we call it, or a standard related to the safety and training of the apprentice on the job, et cetera. And so it's built into the training program as part of the written plan and practice plan, regardless of the age.
So one follow-up is more of a comment, and that is that one of the things I see in our education pieces, we use higher education as that of a college track, and yet I deem higher education is any education that leads to a great career. And so hopefully we could change that definition to be that format.
Totally agree. Representative Kaufman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Director Hakula, as I listen to these presentations, I'm hearing of essentially an interface between schools and other entities. I'm just wondering, is there a matrix of what the funding looks like for that? Is some of the funding extractive of typical education? at high school, or is it supplemented? I know there's federal, but I'm just wondering what all this looks like on paper in terms of a spread between the different entities that are paying for this.
Through the chair, funding is part of the challenge I have about promoting registered apprenticeship is my office does not specifically provide funding, but I know where to direct program sponsors to, employers, intermediaries like Alaska Primary Care Association, which are multi-employer sponsors, where to direct their funding questions. And so you have these larger federal investments for the past, you know, 5 to 7 years that Commissioner Dragas is talking about, that we want to, I was born in Alaska, so this is my state, you know, this is we to me, that the state needs to get ahead of and anticipate and prepare for. And then there's a lot of programs utilize the state training and employment program to build up and shore up their apprenticeship programs. So generally it's a combination of dollars. I think Ms. Sell could talk more about how they utilize the different, you know, funding streams to stand up their apprenticeship, but I know that out of the two federal grants, the American Apprenticeship Initiative and then the State Apprenticeship Expansion Grant, I think there was a couple of funds being utilized. So once the state gets those dollars, they need to allocate them, but they also need to be careful because the feds don't want you double spending and double counting and these kind of things. It kind of gets into some elaborate accounting, important, but states might pull from different sources to solve that training scenario. In this situation, if somehow the state develops this big framework where you have this statewide apprenticeship representative managing this, I would assume that you would try to get that paid for with one of these, forecasted federal grants. Is you would have that package, you would know what their scope of work was, and et cetera, et cetera. And then on the prep side, and then once the announcement came out, it'd be very easy to, finish that kind of a proposal off. But there definitely needs to be an organization of some sort created, and then that's what you're going to, shoot for your major funding with on the federal side as seed money. And then anything extra would be coming in as auxiliary funding. And so I've maybe over-answered your question. I apologize if so.
I think you had a follow-up, and feel free to just proceed with additional follow-ups. I need to ask permission.
Follow-up through the chair. Yes, I just want to also add that I'm maybe one of the only people in the room here to have been certified by the American Welding Society at one point. So I definitely can relate to trades. I just see the funding of this as a pretty complicated matrix of different entities, and I would really, as we proceed with this, like to see clarity around that. So thank you.
Yes, through the chair, just briefly, many of our programs are self-funded by the labor management agreements. And when I was speaking with John Deere, that I specifically asked him, because grants can also be a pay-for-play. And when the grant runs out, the project fails. John Deere built this into their business model. And so any minor funding they're getting, they're in it for the long haul, and they're not depending on funding. That's how critical it is to companies to, develop their future workforce. Thank you.
And Representative Kaufman, I don't know if Ms. Fraze or Ms. Simpson want to talk about Perkins grants and how those support CTE courses, including but not limited to apprenticeship in the school district, and limitations of those Perkins grants. Is that something you would like to address, Ms. Fraze or Simpson?
This is Joni. We use our Perkins grants to support a lot of our different pathways, and we have Perkins was reauthorized, and now it's called Perkins 5, and it's not prescriptive, but there's a process of that we need to go through to make sure that our programs are study are meeting the intention of the law as we write our 4-year plans. Now, could apprenticeships or pre-apprenticeships or school-to-apprenticeships be written into that? Most definitely they could be. And I don't think there's anything that would preclude that at all. And I think that would be, you know, good to have, you know, the Department of Ed, the CTE department, you know, in on conversations like this. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what we've talked about, you know, getting everybody around the table, you know, and, you know, I heard, you know, concerns or just, you know, wondering about, you know, how to put together this, you know, the, you know, all the funding mechanisms and, you know, how to get the systems working together, you know, business and industry and school districts and universities, because, you know, they all function a little bit differently, and then start looking at, you know, what are the possibilities and, you know, connecting to, you know, the high needs, you know, of our labor market and, you know, just do things with intentionality and then, you know, having that central group to really, you know, that's going to be there for a while, you know, so, you know, it's not going to go away if, you know, if we have another election or something, but it's, you know, it's going to be there for the long haul. But yeah, you know, a district could definitely, you know, use Perkins funds if they had, you know, written it into their grant the right way.
Do members have additional questions at this time? Okay.
Representative Fields, may I chime in?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. This is Missy Fraze from the Anchorage School District. I think one of the challenges with Perkins funds, though, in our state, I will say, is that some of our districts get as little as $15,000 in Perkins funds. So it's not a lot of money. And then also Perkins is designed to launch and then be assumed, your programs and those costs should eventually be assumed by other, what would we call your general fund. And really, I think what some of us are, Joni and myself, are looking at is just the manpower behind apprenticeships and making those partnership connections with employers, you know, like the John Deere's of Alaska, and being able to really have the people behind there that help industry understand the apprenticeships and buy into it. That takes a lot of people power, and Perkins funding is limited in how much of your grant can be spent towards salaries. So I think it can, but there are limitations for school districts. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks everyone for testifying. Great information, and it's my hope we can have another hearing on this and look at some legislation and hear from the respective departments on that draft legislation, hear from the university on that legislation as well, since it would affect them. It is 5:07, and Labor and Commerce is adjourned.